Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is a nice, somewhat sunny day here in St. Louis, chilly for our friends up north, and we're going to visit with a friend up in Watertown, Wisconsin, talking about a great new partnership with our friends at Lutheran Church Extension Fund, particularly Laborers for Christ, and our friends at Bethesda Lutheran Communities. Hope you can stick around for the conversation. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on our website. Go to kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Joining us by phone today, Mike Thurtle. He's president and CEO of Bethesda Lutheran Communities. Mike, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Good morning, Andy and Max. It is cold here in Watertown, but our hearts are very warm.
So. Glad to hear that there's something warm there in Watertown today. And in studio with me today, Max Biesenthal, Senior Vice President of Ministry Support at Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Max, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good morning to all. Good morning, Mike. You're looking particularly good today.
I think this is new for KFUL. We're doing stand-up.
Actually, I'm sitting.
I'm sitting too. Although I've been encouraged to stand up. Apparently, I would think better if I were standing. Maybe I would do a better job. Well, gentlemen, I am so glad to have this time to talk with you both today about an exciting new partnership between two unique and outstanding organizations, Bethesda Lutheran Communities and Laborers for Christ. I can't wait to hear what's going on. I know we broke the news about this a while back. I think it was September we mentioned this initially, but looking forward to hearing what's actually coming to fruition and what's about to happen. So before we get too far into the conversation, Mike, share with us a little bit about the work of Bethesda Lutheran Communities.
Oh, absolutely, Andy. Thanks again for having me on today, and it's great to hear Max's voice as well. Bethesda is focused on a mission, a beautiful mission, to spread the good news of Jesus, and that's through the way that we enhance and support the lives of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities through services. And primarily those services right now are through residential services. We actually help people with their living in homes and facilities. We were founded 110 years ago by Lutherans who wanted to connect their heart of faith with hands of service. And that's the same thing that Laborers does as well, which I'm really excited to talk to you about today.
Mm-hmm.
We support people in different ways, really depending on the needs of each individual. Everything from, again, residential services and housing to transportation, getting people to church and to confirmation class and helping them with their employment on a daily basis. And so that's truly our mission, and we're located across the United States, even though we're here in Wisconsin as a headquarters.
And Max, tell us a little bit about the history of Laborers for Christ. What is Laborers for Christ all about?
Well, Laborers for Christ began 38 years ago in the Rocky Mountain District, and it was a group of volunteers who, I think the mission exec at that time had the idea of starting kind of starter churches, and got a group of volunteers together who would go from place to place and put up kind of a starter church. And that then evolved into this group of volunteer laborers. Well, they make minimum wage, but they go from place to place and create or craft buildings.
So they're putting up, as you were saying, starter churches.
In the beginning, that's how it started.
Like the starter building?
Yeah, and back in that day, missions were done just a little differently than they are now, and a district would buy a piece of land and put up a little building, and everything would get started. And once you had a building and a sign, things seemed to happen. So this was an inexpensive way to put up these little starter churches.
Mm-hmm. What would you say today is the strength of Laborers for Christ?
The strength of Laborers for Christ is their ministry mindedness. They certainly do good work.
Mm-hmm.
They are all of a certain age, and one would think that they're not as efficient as those who aren't of a certain age, but they work incredibly hard and incredibly well, and the quality is just off the charts. But they save money. They save a lot of money. I think over the last 16 years, they have saved Missouri Synod Ministries $26 million in buildings, which then becomes kingdom money. But when the laborers have left, the people in the congregations or the ministries in which they were at work don't necessarily talk about the quality of the work, although it's there. They don't talk about the money saved, although it's there. What they talk about is the mission heart of the laborers. They come in and serve with a desire to really move the kingdom forward, and they are all about washing feet. You know, they're all about being servant.
Mike, what would you say is the strength of Bethesda Lutheran Communities today?
Well, our strength is really focused on, as I said a second ago, serving people with disabilities to the best of our abilities and spreading the good news of Jesus to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities on a daily basis. And about a year ago, I had the opportunity, the pleasure to meet with Matt Harrison and his staff. And one of the things that I talked with them about a year ago was really our mission of I wanted to be the preeminent RSO for the LCMS, and preeminent meaning that I wanted to work with other Lutheran organizations, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod organizations, to truly amp up the value and quality of what we provide to people, not just here in the U.S. but across the planet. And God worked this problem for us, and we can't take any credit for it, because this literally came about, literally by chance is how you could look at it, but I would call it a divine intervention of a relationship that we've developed with Max and his team, because what laborers does and the value that they provide to an organization like ours, which gets translated into the mission space of how we take care of people to the highest quality, it's truly amazing. And I look back at this now after a year, and I listened to the broadcast from September 2, Andy, last night as I was getting ready for today. And even last September, I could not have predicted the benefit that our organization has seen and the people that we support have seen through the laborers' hands, and the ability for us to, once again, like Bethesda used to, network with our Lutheran brothers and sisters across the United States and hold hands as we serve together in this mission.
What are the needs of Bethesda Communities, Lutheran Communities, that laborers will be able to help with?
We, about a year ago, we undertook an initiative to look at our entire real estate, I'll call it portfolio, and we literally have hundreds of facilities across the United States, and it was the first time in the organization's history that we had done this kind of a review of everything that we owned, everything that we lease, and what conditions it's in, and essentially looking across to make sure that we are providing the people that we support with disabilities and our staffs the best facilities. Because I'm really trying to amp up quality. Quality is always an indicator, and with our Christian mission, that's two attributes that are very unique to our organization. As we did this scan, we did a formal scan of all of our properties, had a firm that helped us with that inventory. We looked at maintenance activities. We looked at how things were being done. And like any organization, I'll be the first one to admit that we have areas for improvement. And so we came back with this list of things and literally had thousands of action items that came from this across our entire portfolio. And the next question was, how do we address them? And about that time, God's hand worked when we were at a board meeting last May, and one of our board members who knows of laborers, and I had known of laborers in the past when I was an elder and a congregational member, but I didn't fully understand what laborers did. I thought they were primarily church planners. I didn't understand the breadth of activities that Max has in his portfolio today. And through that connection, through our board member, Max and I were introduced to one another, and we started a dialogue about what laborers does, what Bethesda does. Right now, literally right now, laborers is working on, has a plan to work on facilities across the entire United States for us. I was just out on the laborers website the other day, and they're soliciting volunteers for this as well. But we literally have about 170 facilities, properties across the U.S. that laborers is working on as we speak today. They started in Texas this late last fall. And literally, they're in California as we speak today. In fact, I was just out in California this past weekend on Friday and Saturday. got an opportunity to meet the team that's working on maintenance of our homes out there, remediation as well as longer term maintenance. And what a great group of people. They attended a dinner with us. We actually produced a video that showed the great work that they're doing. And I can't begin to tell you the beauty of this video, in the sense of when you see the laborers there and they're praying in the morning as they go into the fight, so to speak, to do the great work that they do. And along strolls somebody who we support with intellectual developmental disabilities. And they stroll right into the prayer chain, and they become part of it. Mm-hmm. And you hear the commentary from them about how happy they are to have laborers there in their home. Mm-hmm. It's just a truly beautiful scene when you see the picture painted that way.
Max, this is a different scene than typical laborers'
yes.
projects. In the past,
yes.
it's been primarily church
yes.
buildings.
Yes. So now we actually have what we refer to internally as a Bethesda division. And we still have, now we're referring to our traditional approach as kind of the core mm-hmm. laborers approach. And so this was a great opportunity for us to serve in meaningful ways in the kingdom, to come alongside Bethesda and help them support those that they support. So we had to kind of amp up our organization just a little bit. So we actually contracted with somebody, hired somebody to be our front man in terms of going out to these 170 homes mm-hmm. and kind of doing an assessment with the Bethesda folk as well, kind of laying out a plan for how the remediation would take place. And then over the next 3 years, we will geographically undertake this rather large and ambitious project. And it's going very well.
How does this work on homes differ from, you know, building a new church building or an addition at a church or a renovation at a church?
It's significantly different because let's say they're in a congregation, they're putting up a parish hall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they have parish halls anymore, but let's say they're putting up one of those. They become so marinated in the congregation, they become so embedded in the congregation, and they become actually part of that congregational life. And volunteers from the congregation are out there, you know, picking up stuff. In the homes, it's considerably different because they're a bit disconnected from a congregational ministry. And oftentimes in the homes, the people that Bethesda serve are out on day trips of some sort. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there's nobody home when they're doing their work. So from that standpoint, we've had to really be intentional about connecting laborers with a real sense of ministry. The fact that they have such servant hearts and know that the work that they're doing as they go through these homes is moving the kingdom forward in loving and powerful ways really connects mm-hmm. well with them. But it's been a different approach.
Mike, have you had a chance to see the interaction or learn about the interaction between the laborers and those in the community? Have you had a chance to see that in action?
I have. I've seen it firsthand myself. I've also seen documentation of it through some of the videos that we're collecting mm-hmm. and pictures. And it's amazing the breadth of skills that Max's team brings to this fight. These guys are experts in what they've done in the past, but more than experts in a competency kind of way. I want to amplify what Max said about their passion as kingdom workers and the passion of how they serve. It's clear when you talk to the laborers and see you can just see in their eyes. I'm a studier of eyes when it comes to understanding leadership, and truly the eyes are the soul, linked to the soul. And you can see it in their eyes when you talk to them about the fire that they have, about wanting to serve, about wanting to contribute. What I love about this model, even though we're going to save literally millions of dollars through this initiative because of how we're structuring the business relationship with laborers, that to me is not the most important objective here. The most important objective is how we are, as brothers and sisters in arms, linking together and spreading this good news in a different kind of way, in a very meaningful kind of way, that helps out both of our organizations respectively, mm-hmm. but more important, broadening this passion and commitment in the kingdom to be able to connect people. Connecting people, to me, is the beauty of this relationship. Our ability at Bethesda to serve people, and honestly, I think our mission is, and I haven't talked to the laborers this way, but I'd be willing to bet they describe it this way, that it's a mission in their heart as well, because they're touching people that probably on a daily basis they may not typically touch. And at the same time, they are connecting us to congregations and to other kinds of people that aren't even in congregations. For example, out in California right now, when I was out there, we've got activities in Bakersfield and Laguna Hills going on, Lake Forest and Mission Viejo. And in California alone, Laborers has been working with an organization called Morningstar Electric and Construction. I just met with their leaders at the dinner the other night, and I thanked them personally for what they're doing. And I could just tell with that interaction, the Laborers' mission, essentially working through our mission, is creating even more connections across this kingdom of people that we may not even have engaged before. So it's truly a way for us to spread the good news, to do the kind of mission outreach that we talk about, but sometimes we're not able to execute. And it's just, it's creating all kinds of positive attributes, positive externalities in this space that we operate in.
How many people, Mike, do you estimate will be served through, you know, will be touched by this service of Laborers for Christ? How many Bethesda partners will be touched by this?
Well, I know of at least one, and that's me. I think I've already been touched. The minute I met Max and his team, I was touched, because these are wonderful people, and I can't amplify enough how great these guys are and what they do, just their mission orientation. I love it. Mm-hmm. I would suggest, if I had to quantify this, you could look at it a couple different ways. One way is, how many people are they actually literally serving in these group homes? And it's going to be literally in the thousands. Just if I looked at that alone, the people that they're going to serve and the lives that they're going to enhance through better facilities and better real estate and the prayers that go on out there and the connections that way, it's literally on the low side, thousands. If we look at other impacts, other kinds of ways that, you know, if you drop a pebble in the lake, how you get the ripple effect of this problem to me is easily in the tens of thousands or more. And I attribute that because of the outreach that LCEF is doing right now, how we market this, how Bethesda is talking about it. We have people who go out to our website and see this, and they love the mission. This interview today, I think, is another great way, because you guys have an audience that I think is uniquely attuned to this. The people that Laborers are engaging out there, the congregations who become part of this. At one time, Bethesda was literally a flagship in some ways for the LCMS as a RSO, and I want to reinvigorate that. I want us to be out there and connecting with people in congregations, and literally everybody knows about us, not because of us, but because of the mission that we serve and spreading that good news. So as I look at this problem, and I'm a data analyst at heart, I think it literally gets into the tens of thousands of people that we reach out there, maybe hundreds of thousands. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a testament to what the Laborers' mission is about and using us as a vehicle to achieve that.
Max, what does one need to possess to be a laborer for Christ?
A hammer and a heart. Not in that order. They're marvelous people, as Mike said. The competence level is kind of off the charts. But what's really what binds them together is their mission heart. They truly they wash feet, and they love to wash feet.
And that comes in the form of hammers and nails.
Swinging
sometimes. Sometimes sledgehammers.
This is such an exciting partnership between, these are two, and I always use the term iconic, because, you know, I grew up, and if I don't know if you have any listeners that are over 50, but back in the day, we all knew Bethesda. In fact, we called it Watertown. Mm-hmm. And we knew all about what it was. And it, you know, the brand equity was gigantic for Watertown. And then there was Laborers of Christ, which had a similar kind of name equity. Mm-hmm. And now we've kind of come together. And I think we, you know, it's Ephesians 3:20 and 21. God will do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine through this partnership, because there are seeds being planted that Mike nor I know anything about that will come to fruition at some point.
With just a little bit of time left, how can someone become a laborer for Christ?
We need them.
Need volunteers
to step up
to the plate, or sign up. And
because of our, quote, Bethesda division, and we're also ramping up on the traditional side, we are in need of laborers. So they can, I think there's an opportunity to sign up through Bethesda's website, Mike, is that right?
Yes, sir, it is. It's located at BethesdaLutheranCommunities.org/LCEF. So we've got a website just dedicated
Perfect.
To this where people can go out and check it out.
And then there's also the opportunity to go on LCEF's website, which is lcef.org, and go to the laborers page, and there'll be an opportunity to sign up there as well. It's a potentially wonderful second career for people.
Absolutely. A lot of folks who do this are those who have the gift of time and can take. How long might one spend on a project like this?
Well, on the Bethesda project, it's a little more short-lived mm-hmm. than what we would call the core. And, you know, because you're really kind of remediating homes, and it's a lot of, you know, a lot of picking up and moving and mm-hmm. filling holes and stuff like that. So a much shorter time for the Bethesda weeks, where
Absolutely.
With core, it could be mm-hmm. months.
So this could be someone could, if they had the vacation time too, they could take a month or so.
Absolutely.
Go do something like that. Great. Well, Mike, I understand one other thing that I wanted to share, news that I just got from Bethesda not too long ago. Another neat opportunity for students this year, the scholarships that Bethesda Lutheran Communities is offering for the 2016-2017 academic year. Who are the students that are eligible for, who might want to look into these scholarships?
We're partnering with our Bethesda Auxiliary this year, Andy, to offer 10 scholarships for the upcoming school year 2016-17. In total, we're going to provide about $20,000 worth of scholarship funds. This is truly an opportunity for us to create opportunities for the next generation in the field of intellectual and developmental disabilities, connect younger people with our mission, which is incredibly important, as you can imagine, as seed corn for the future as we work this mission space. Lutheran high schools, college, seminary students with a career orientation in this field is what we're looking for. And so we've got 10 scholarships available. The application deadline is Sunday, May the 1st. There's some GPA, grade point average, minimum requirements. It's, again, located out on our website as well if people wanted to apply. BethesdaLutheranCommunities.org/scholarships. And if people wanted to check into that, they could definitely do that and apply by the 1st. And we'll be announcing recipients of those scholarships in July. And, again, we view this as another mission space for us to be able to get people oriented towards fields of study and work and developing that sense of heart and also hands about how they can serve in a certain kind of way, in a different kind of way, and lead them in that direction to serve Christ.
All right, BethesdaLutheranCommunities.org, and thanks so much for sharing about that as well. That's a unique opportunity. Gentlemen, we are all out of time. Thank you for being my guest today. Mike Thirtle, President and CEO, Bethesda Lutheran Communities. Thanks for joining us by phone today.
Thank you. Nice talking to both of you today.
Absolutely.
See you, Mike.
And Max Biesenthal, Senior Vice President of Ministry Support, LCEF, Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Thanks for being my guest
Always
today.
Always a pleasure. Always.
Gentlemen, God's blessings, and thank you for your service. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to revisit a conversation with Linda Bartlett on the vocation of moms. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Tomorrow's the first anniversary of the death of my beloved colleague, mentor, and friend, Dr. Jack Wilkie. For nearly two decades, it was his voice you heard on this program. I still really miss him. Others also note the anniversary of the loss of a loved one. in particular those who've chosen abortion to resolve an unexpected pregnancy. Sometimes the anniversary can cause physical illness for the mother. Fathers hurt too. If you or someone you love is struggling with the emotional aftermath of abortion, there's hope and healing for mothers and fathers of aborted babies. And it's free. Contact me through our website at lifeissues.org. We can find you a counselor who's qualified to walk with you through this journey. You're not alone, and you don't have to hurt anymore.
Follow us on Twitter at LifeIssuesUSA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Join Worldwide KFUO and Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County for live Lenten worship on Wednesdays throughout the season of Lent. The broadcasts begin at 11 a.m. with Pastors Dennis Kastens and Joe Ferguson presiding over midweek Lenten worship leading up to Easter Sunday. Peace Lutheran Church, located at 737 Barracks View Road in South County, invites you to join these Lenten worship services in person or on Worldwide KFUO at kfuo.org, the messenger of good news.
Are you willing to share your talents while learning new skills and enjoying fellowship? The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is looking for volunteers who can help us share the love of Christ by offering their time and talents at the International Center. For more information, contact Maureen at Volunteer Connection 314-996-1629. 314-996-1629.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Joining us for this segment, Linda Bartlett. She's former president of Lutherans for Life, an author and founder of Titus II for Life, a wife, mom, and grandmother as well. Linda, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you.
It's great to finally get a chance to talk with you, and excited today to celebrate moms and to talk about the vocation of mother. Let's talk about your background. You're a wife, a mom, a grandmother. You've served as president of Lutherans for Life. You've written and published quite a bit, actually, and one significant book. We'll talk about that a little bit near the end of our program as well today. And also founder of Titus II for Life. You must stay pretty busy.
There are a lot of opportunities, Andy. This is a wide world. As KFU knows, of opportunities. I think, you know, you asked earlier where I learned the most about motherhood. I had never really understood it to be a vocation. So as a Christian woman, I'd have to say I learned it backwards. I think, in other words, I experienced it first. I think it was my husband and my sons that taught me about the vocation of motherhood. I think I've always known what God's word says about male and female and fathers and mothers and the order of creation, but it didn't mean as much to me until my husband and my sons helped me see the reality of it and the sense of it. And I could also see then later in my own marriage and motherhood how my mom and my grandmothers had been mentoring me just by remaining faithful to God's vocation of motherhood instead of bending to the powerful voices of radical feminism, which goes back even as far as post-World War II. So I think I learned it on the job, and that strengthened my understanding of what God had been telling me all along.
I suppose if we were to liken it, if we were to compare it to, for example, the vocation of pastor, the seminary makes a seminarian, but the parish makes a pastor. You can study, you can learn, you can have a worldview that includes a perspective on what that might mean, what it might be. But until you have that calling, until you're given that vocation, you don't fully understand what that vocation is until you stay in those shoes.
You put your finger right on it, I think, Andy. And maybe that is why it is such a challenge today for a young woman. She's told to go out and be all of these things, whatever she wants to be, you know, get the education, have the career. In the meantime, she's told that one day she'll get to be a wife and a mother, but those are not vocations to her. Those are not things that she's setting out to do. So while she's learning all these other things and she's taken up with this progressive, idealistic culture that's becoming much less Christian and much more, shall we say, secular humanist, she's in conflict with who God has really made her to be as a woman. So if she has no friends, no support, no encouragement to ponder what it means to be a wife and a mother and to indeed keep her eyes open for someone that's going to be a good father to her children, mm-hmm. she isn't going to learn until maybe years later that she maybe missed the most grand opportunities to consider what it means to make a home, what it means to be that wife that is supportive and encouraging and indeed a co-steward of the world, of life.
Do you think we have devalued this vocation of mother, this vocation of wife and mother well, at least in North America alone? Do you think we've devalued it, that we put emphasis on other vocations instead?
I do, and I think it has happened subtly. It has happened in many cases intentionally. Satan does not want the woman to be the mother of life, which is what Eve means. He does not want that family. He does not want the unity of a home. He does not want generations, anniversaries, and birthdays. He does not want those things. So he is always at work. The enemy of life is always at work, leading the woman to look elsewhere. The world, of course, is never really our friend. We think it is, but it is not. And I think the world really works against women. There's no end to what a woman can do. I think women are multi-talented. They are gifted in so many ways, but it seems there's less encouragement for her to put those gifts and abilities to work for her own home, for her children, for posterity. It's usually do what you want to do and do what makes you feel good about yourself. I have a young friend who is not feeling so good about herself right now because she is longing for a husband and a home, but she's no one's wife and she's no one's homemaker. She is instead doing battle out there in the world and relying on our emotions instead of what she knows God has told her is true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, Andy, that we're being led outside the home to find an identity in career and in maybe what we can make financially, even to compete with men. And then there's a void. Who fills that void?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the vocation of a father has been devalued as well, in a similar way that you know, a father or a man who you know, cuddles and snuggles with kids and plays games with them or sits down and colors with them historically hasn't always been viewed as you know, the strong and manly type that and in a sense has been devalued. I think that's changing. I think that perception, I think we're starting to value fathers that spend time with children and interact with children and that are loving husbands as well. I think that's becoming more valuable in our valued more in our culture today. But when I think about moms and the vocation of mother, I think it's been a while since I had this realization, but if you think about it, who influences society and culture the most, especially the next generation of leaders and those who really shape society are moms. Moms have the most influence over children and their worldview, their education, the things that children aspire to is quite often shaped by moms. Yet we've devalued this vocation of mother, but they're the ones who really, I think, in my opinion, have the most influence on society and culture.
I think it was Martin Luther who said that the female sex is merciful by nature. It's born to show mercy and to cherish, just as a man is born to protect. And so that woman, in respect to her infant, is showing great mercy, but she is also, as you say, influencing, encouraging, building up, and actually introducing that child to their true identity while the man is standing at the door of his home, protecting and guarding against the enemy of life, which is something we don't think about too much anymore. We're not in a period of war where there's an enemy literally standing at the door, but I think a man is called to do that, the enemy being the world itself, sin, and Satan. So he is standing at the door protecting. She's in that home, nurturing, welcoming her children as well as a neighborhood of children. Then he also enters into that, and he finds his place of, as you say, you painted a beautiful picture of him playing with his children, interacting with them, and he is teaching them as well. Both are needed, and I love what a woman doctor said back in the late 1800s. She said the male and the female are not in competition. They're the two eyes of the human race, and both are needed for proper perspective.
How did the women in your life influence your understanding of wife and mother?
I think, first of all, Andy, they influenced me to be faithful. I guess maybe that's what I saw the most in my grandmothers, mm-hmm, and my mom. I know their lives were not easy. I know they were sacrificing. I know they didn't get to have a lot of the things they wanted to have, and yet they were living well. I think what they taught me is that they had to be selfless and they had to be self-controlled. And that meant thinking of others first. And probably that's what made them the happiest. My grandmothers and my mom were all talented women. They could have done so many different things. They could have done them all outside the home. But I think in faithfulness and response to God, they applied what gifts they had to be used within the home for their husbands and for their children and for their neighbors. What they did within the church, within the congregation, the community, this taught me that, no, we're not confined to four walls of the house. We take out our gifts and our abilities, but ultimately they're used with regard to the benefits of home and family and neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. How does that compare to today's to many worldviews and to today's many perspectives on women, mothers, wives, in this vocation of mother?
I see two things, Andy. I see that women sometimes are forced to go away from where they might really most like to be. They maybe want to be wife and mom, to have that home, to be in the home and interacting and not called away to go outside to have that job that they need to have for financial reasons. I see also that some have been groomed and told you must go out there and be that president of a company to hold that position, to apply your 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of schooling, of college and university education, and then put on hold the home and the family. I see two things happening, and in either place, she's in conflict with, mm-hmm, herself, with her body, with her womanhood, with who God has made her to be. I think we're often told that everything that's naturally womanly has to be minimized, managed, or distorted into what it's not. And then what happens to the woman?
Minimized, managed, or distorted. That's a... We do that with just about any vocation.
And so it is, living in the world.
How can we make a shift, a move? Do you think we're moving more toward an appreciation and valuing of or at least a proper understanding of the vocation of mother?
I think we can. Or you know what else we could do, Andy, is just start fresh. Maybe as far as we've come in this chaotic, upside-down world, maybe it's hard to return to what we once knew or are told about. Maybe we start fresh. Maybe it is a younger generation that asks the questions of, hey, wait a minute, we see this isn't working. We see mom is out there, out in industry or out in some career outside the home, but we see that she really wants to be home. And what can we do to help her do that? We see dads that are being separated from their families. What can we do to help reunite fathers to their homes and families, their wives? I think there's always hope with the next generation. And maybe if we ask the questions, if we promote the dialogue, maybe it is the younger generation that will say, hey, we've got a great idea. God had a plan. Let's consider it. What does that mean for us? I think there's always hope. I see generations of hope. I'm the opposite of Satan's doom and gloom and death. And the liars had our attention long enough. It's time to hear truth.
What about the woman, the young woman, or even you know, middle-aged and older, who wants to work outside the home, who wants to pursue a career, who wants to study engineering, who wants to work and study and be the best in that field?
She may indeed have a call to that. Those may be her gifts. She may have to ask then, what are my priorities and to what end? Where can I be of the most, well, let's go back to who we are called to be. Women are helpers. That is a vocation. How will we best help? Will we help to build up or to tear down? Will we help to make my personal world better or the world for our family and our neighbors? How will we most help, best help, and to what end? That is, I think, the question that the woman who is called to be the helper should ask. It is not to deny her uniquely given gifts and talents, her wisdom, her knowledge, but how will she put it to use and to honor whom?
And I think that's a pretty good question, or serious questions to ask ourselves, whether male or female. You know, how will what I'm given to do, how will my vocation, my work, will it support my family or provide for my family, but how will it affect my neighbor as well?
Exactly. And I know, I remember reading the story of a very, very successful woman attorney who actually, when she became pregnant and she had twins, she decided to put her career on hold to have those girls. And while in the hospital, she looked at the nurse and said, I know how to be an attorney. I know how to engage the world. I don't know how to be a mom. And the nurse told her, you will learn. It will come to you. And she said, it was the best thing I ever did. Being an attorney waited for her. She could go back to it. But being a mom was an opportunity that she wouldn't have again. And she had that opportunity to raise daughters with the support and encouragement of her husband, their father, to raise them to be young women who understood their identity and their call, their womanhood.
And how that identity, how that vocation or the vocations to which they're given serves their neighbor. So much of what we're concerned with in our culture here, in the U.S., is about me. How is this going to serve me? Am I going to make a lot of money. I know as children, especially in, you know, in my generation, we were told from very early on that we need to you need to get a good education, not just high school diploma, but you need to get a college degree, at least a bachelor's degree. And then even later on being told you need to have a master's degree in order to have a really good job so that you can have a really good income and do well for yourself.
And then, Andy, think of what's happening during that. Let's go clear back to, let's say, elementary school, and we've got abstinence education going on, or basically sex education, and they're told, oh, marriage is going to be wonderful, that whole relationship of marriage, the sexual relationship, wonderful, but put it on hold, wait, get your degree, get your master's, pay off the debt, get your home, get settled in your career, and then start. Get married and start your family. Wait a minute, what have you just done? What cruel thing have we done to that young woman or that young man in telling them to wait all that time to do what really does come naturally, that love and attraction and bond and wanting to be together and starting a family and making a home under that covering of marriage. We just said, wait, put it on hold. Get the degree, pay off the debt, get the job, and then, what, at age 30, 35, consider marriage and family?
Sure.
It's a little backwards.
It is. You know, I look around, and now, granted, I took a little bit longer to follow through that plan, but you know, I'm probably about 10 years behind my classmates, my peers. In terms of things, I finished the college degree and went into a profession and continued my education with a graduate degree or a master's degree as well, and then pursued marriage, and now we have a child, and we're truly grateful for all that. But it's kind of funny looking back. All of my peers, you know, they have children who are 8, 9, 10 years old. I have almost 2 year old.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like I said earlier, I had to learn on the spot, too. We learn through experience. I do remember a young pastor coming to me when I was finished speaking one day, and he said, Linda, I really disobeyed my parents. And I looked at him, and he said, well, I married early, and we started our family young. And he said, it was because we could do this together that I was able to get through seminary and to do the things I needed to do. But we were doing it together. She was my helpmate. Mm-hmm. She helped me do it, and I have not forgotten her role in this as well, her talents, her abilities, what she's contributed to all of this, the wisdom that she's provided. So I think we do need to rethink, what is God's plan? What is his design? And have we added to it? Have we been like Eve, who added to God's word and inserted her own idea, her own words? Have we done that with God, with marriage, with this relationship between men and women?
Not only inserting our own ideas, but those ideas being focused on self and what I want. We look at... Look at that fall in the garden, and God gives them all this beautiful creation to enjoy. What's the one thing they focus on? What's the one thing we humans focus on? That which God did not give us.
Exactly. It's what we covet. It's what we want. And then we become God ourselves. Civilizations have always found great wisdom in teaching men self-control. Men can be maybe naturally aggressive, perhaps even sexually aggressive. We have taught them to be self-controlled. We've used to do that with women. We would teach them to be self-controlled with their emotions. Don't just do whatever you feel like doing. Don't put yourself first. Today, we've let that go. Oh, do whatever you want to do, woman. Feel yourself. Find yourself. Let your emotions be known. We need to practice self-control. And again, that focus, as you've just said, God has given us so much. He gave everything in the garden, and we want the one thing that he claims for himself.
God have mercy on us.
Yes.
And thanks be to God in Christ Jesus, he has. Two things that I want to mention. We have just a few minutes left. I wanted to point out two things. Titus 2 for Life. Tell us about Titus 2 for Life.
Started it after years of being out among Lutherans in the congregations in our schools, talking with parents and children and with pastors and families on life issues, and then listening to what the young people were saying, what women and men were saying, hearing sadness in some cases, regret and grief, hearing women who've had abortions, hearing women who realized only later what mattered most, and so thought, what about mentoring? How do we mentor women and men to that design that God has called us to be, to find great joy in being a male or a female, whether we're married or single, whether we're young or old? And so Titus 2 came into being, and I just meet with groups of women and encourage them using the model from Titus 2, where older men are mentoring the younger men and older women mentor younger women. And it was a model St. Paul was inspired to give to young Titus in the midst of a very pagan and chaotic world. It was a model that has proven to be magnificent for generations.
And where can we find out more about Titus 2 for Life?
The website, Titus, the number 2-4, life.org. Also have a blog site, mm-hmm. azerwoman.wordpress.com, and also a book website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us about your book.
The Failure of Sex Education in the Church, Mistaken Identity, Compromised Purity. That came into being after the years in Lutherans for Life and the Titus 2 experiences. Just hearing people confused about their identity and hearing people very comfortable and familiar with their sexual identity, but not with their God-given identity as male or female, as their holy identity in Jesus Christ. So it's a book that has a lot of questions with answers, resources, doing quite a few presentations on that where I work together with pastors on a panel, and we discuss the created order, biblical manhood and womanhood, marriage and family, and God's instruction for purity.
Hmm. And I gather we can find that on the Titus 2, Titus number 2-4 life.org, Titus 2-4 life.org. We can find information about the book on there as well, correct?
And there or Amazon.com.
Very good. Well, Linda, I know we're running out of time here, but I certainly want to say thanks for the conversation today. Any special moms or anyone you want to give a shout out to today for Mother's Day as we wrap up our conversation?
I would love to give a shout out to my two daughter-in-laws who are terrific moms, and they are a joy and an honor as Christian young women to have in our family. So thanks, Andy, for letting me do that.
Sure, you bet. Linda Bartlett, former president of Lutherans for Life, author and founder of Titus 2 for Life, wife, mom, grandmother, and a great conversation today. Linda, thank you so much for being our guest on Faith and Family. Great to have a chance to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Andy. God's blessings on you.
Thank you. God bless you and all the work that you're doing. I certainly appreciate it. Hope we can have you back in the future. Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.